When we go crashing down, we come back every time. By Darth Stitch. Read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. A series of short ficlets in which a dream lord greets his dreamlings, where Hob Gadling needs to deal with his feral gremlin students, where poetry happens and isn't Shakespeare, and finally Joanna Constantine, a knight of the round table, and an archangel somehow end up in a certain pub. 1. Dream of the Endless has seen a great many things in his eons of existence. That doesn't mean he never gets pleasantly surprised every now and then. The Lord of Dreams gazed down at Fauntleroy, who was currently surrounded by peeping yellow balls of fluff and feathers. This particular dream was very proud of their children, who happily approached their king as he knelt down to gently pent each of them in turn.
"Hello, little dreamlings," he greeted them. "Yes, Fauntleroy, you are to be congratulated on your offspring, and I do appreciate that none of you have turned the library books as nesting materials. I am sure that Lucienne feels the same."
Fauntleroy quacked and ruffled their feathers. Dream soothed them.
"Of course you wouldn't dare do such an uncouth thing. You are very diligent in your duties and are to be commended. I thank you."
Fauntleroy and the dreamlings quacked at him happily and waddled back onto the library.
"It's like live-action Pokemon, only cuter," Matthew observed from his perch on Dream's shoulder.
"Pokemon.
Oh, boy. Ask the kids, boss. You'll probably end up finding out more than you ever wanted to know."
"Will I regret asking them, I wonder?"
"Well, we're gonna find out if you end up creating Pokemon-like dreams and nightmares next. Just, seriously, I'm begging you. Stick to making them dreams, please. I don't want to know what a nightmare Pikachu looks like."
Delirium ended up adopting a couple of the dreamlings, or rather, they ended up adopting her. Dream had not been prepared to be knocked over and glomped by his delighted, literally, sister afterwards. But he took that in good grace and patted her head awkwardly.
There.
Delirium named the two dreamlings Shaughnessy and Ferdy. 2. Hob Gadling is perfectly aware of what Dream is really up to when he disrupts his occasional Zoom class. He could make a few comparisons between his darling and cats, because he's already suffered through the "jail for my father for 1,000 years" look from Miette whenever the spoilt thing felt particularly neglected. Really, it's 10 times worse when he gets ambushed by both cat and boyfriend. Thus, Miette has become as much a fixture in his Zoom classes as Dream was, though slightly less disruptive. Hob enjoys every moment, though, especially the mischievous light in the Dreamlord's eyes and that small, sweet smile that used to be so rarely given. Hob will never truly tire of seeing it on him. Hob now has a list of favorite reactions and commentary from newer students whenever they encounter Dream for the first time, aided and abetted by the feral gremlins of the Hellfire Club. Max is in charge of the list, and much to everyone's eternal hilarity, Hob has now been granted access to the file. "Who in the Edward Cullen is that? OMFG! Hob. "Is this why you lot suddenly started reading Godforsaken Twilight? Sana all!" Hob. "Thank you, Isabel, for explaining the Taglish idiom to me. Look, I do hope everyone gets this lucky." "Duck! Dove! Love! Send help, I can't!" Hob. "Do I really use all those pet names all the time?" Max. "That's why we originally thought Murphy's actual name was Duck, Professor G." "Dearest, in that voice. That took me out, lads. Rip me." Hob. And he knows exactly what he's doing to me when he does that to me, the cheeky bastard. Max. And you love every second of it, Professor G. Don't lie. "You know it's true love because Murphy gets away with being a Shakespeare fan." Hob. "He gets away with nothing, let me tell you.
Max, nope. You can't rant in here, sir. Save it for the classroom.
WTF, Professor G. Did you go and marry Edward Cullen when we weren't looking?
Hob. First, he's not a sparkly vampire. Second, we're working on it. According to him, I've already proposed. Max. Three. So we're agreed then, right, Tuck? We're not going to do the whole tragic love story thing with the dying and the misunderstandings and the utter stupidity of the lovers involved. Did I ever tell you how much I truly loathe Romeo and Juliet?
You have, dearest. At length. You may feel free to tell me again, however. I rather enjoyed it.
You're taking the piss, aren't you?
I do love nothing in the world so well as you.
See, now I know you're taking the piss because you're quoting bloody Will Shakespeare at me again.
A breath. And then... Somewhere I have never travelled, gladly beyond any experience, your eyes have their silence. In your most frail gesture are things which enclose me, or which I cannot touch because they are too near. I do not know what it is about you that closes and opens. Only something in me understands the voice of your eyes is deeper than all roses. Nobody, not even the rain, has such small hands.
The inn was abruptly silent. Hob wasn't sure if Dream had meant everyone to hear, but everyone most definitely did. It was impossible not to just sit up and pay attention to that deep, resonant voice, even if he'd only directed it to his audience of one. The other thing was that Hob knew perfectly well that Dream was not quoting Shakespeare, and the impossible, thoroughly exasperating, absolute darling knew good and goddamn well that he'd finally succeeded in driving Hob round the bend. Because he was going to kiss Dream right this second, never mind the peanut gallery in the background. Ah, well, it was worth it. 4. Joanna Constantine did not appreciate being kidnapped. If she managed to get herself out of this mess, she'd hunt down her good old mate, Vernon Kingsley, and make sure to ram his bollocks down his bloody throat. He had told her that this was just a job, an easy little cleansing of some haunted manor chasing away its old ghosts. She hadn't expected to be knocked out cold and to wake up in some damp, dungeon-style basement. She patted herself down, relieved that she was still wearing her own clothes. The last thing she needed was to end up as sacrifice for some rich tosser's idea of a black mass. There was a little boy in an old-fashioned nightshirt flitting about in the shadows. She opened her mouth to call out to him. Was the kid another hostage, maybe? But then she really looked and realized what he was. "He ain't real," a male voice said behind her. "Christ!" She'd reacted, of course, aiming to land a hit, but her arm was caught in a firm, if gentle, grip. She ended up facing a young man in the most exquisitely tailored suit she'd ever seen, bright green eyes hidden behind glasses. "Ah, no, Duck. I'm in the same boat as you." That familiar accent, so out of place with his fine clothes, reassured her. A little bit. "Same boat being..." The young man shrugged. "Captured? Got a bit unlucky, but then we don't usually muck about with all this occult shite, unless I got Percy with me." He flashed her a smile, sunny and sweet. "I go by Eggsy. And you are?" "Joe," she returned. "I thought I was supposed to do a little bit of ghost busting." She looked around the dungeon. There was a broken circle of ancient runes in a language that Joanna knew hadn't been spoken in 10,000 years. A wreckage of iron lay in another corner. There was an altar, as she had feared, with the usual odds and ends of ritual magic on it, the wickedly sharp knife and the ornate bejeweled cup among them. And there was, again, the little boy, darting in and out of sight. He looked lost and frightened. Joanna's heart went out to him. He was most likely trapped in here and unable to move on to wherever the dead were meant to go. "Fuck," she said feelingly. She tried to move forward, but found, to her dismay, that she was trapped in a smaller binding circle. The young man just behind her sighed. "I'm trapped too." He gestured downwards at his own binding circle. "I tried to break it up, but..." He winced. It hurts somehow. He held up a palm which was slightly reddened as if he tried to touch a too hot pan without gloves. I apologize truly for the inconvenience, Miss Constantine and Master Unwin. Or is it Sir Gary Unwin now? Came a new voice. But I needed your assistance. An old man stepped into the dim lighting of the basement, cane in hand. He had some other people behind him, all in hooded robes. And, of course, he was flanked by two oversized armed thugs. What a horrible cliché. There's this thing called asking nicely, Joanna said tartly. You might have heard of it. Also, rich toff like you could have just waved a bit dosh at me. A woman needs to make a living. I assure you, you will be compensated well for your troubles, Miss Constantine, said the old man. I have need of your particular skills.
To do what exactly?
A summoning and a binding. I am prepared to pay any price. The old man nodded at Eggsy. I have already prepared a suitable sacrifice. The greatest knight of Arthur's round table, the one with the purest heart. I think there's enough power in that without having to search for feathers from an angel's wing.
Eggsy choked. You've gone balmy is what you are.
The ghost child was now next to Eggsy, his eyes frighteningly blank and unseeing. In his hands was the mangled remains of a raven.
Love makes us all do terrible, terrible things, the old man murmured.
He had an old grimoire in his hands, and Joanna had seen enough of them to recognize that the binding was made of human skin.
But you will help me capture Dream of the Endless, Joanna Constantine.
What?
The old man's gaze fell on the boy, and his expression softened with tenderness, made all the more frightening by his next words.
I'll do whatever I must to save the man I love.
Mutely, the boy held the raven up, blood and entrails dripping down his hands. Things happened very fast. The thugs moved forward, and Eggsy visibly was bracing himself for a fight. Joanna was still racking her brains for a plan, anything to get out of this mess. She had begun to murmur a spell to break the binding circle, praying that she'd gotten the Latin conjugations right, or she might end up in another dimension entirely. But there was this sudden swooping sound, as if mighty wings had started beating. There was a blinding light, Eggsy crying out, Percy! And the flash of a sharp sword. When Joanna blinked her eyes open and got her bearings, there was another man, tall, dark-haired, dressed in a suit similar to Eggsy's own. The only difference was the massive black wings on his back and the sword in his hands. Everyone else was on their knees or sprawled on the ground, groaning. The man... No, the Archangel sheathed his sword. Dream of the Endless will not be caught by your hedge magic tricks a second time. Eggsy grabbed the grimoire away from the weeping old man. Joanna spared a glance downwards. The binding circles that had been around them were both broken, the stone beneath looking as if it were sliced apart, like a knife through butter.
I freed him. I freed him, and this is how he repays me? I just want to save my Alex, the old man blubbered.
The pieces fell into place for Joanna. The ghost boy, Alex Burgess. This had to be Fawny Rig, where Morpheus had once been captured and spent over a century.
Damn. You expected repayment. You expected a reward from the one you and your lover have held in captivity and torment.
We didn't capture him. It was his father that did it.
And yet, when Roderick Burgess died, you still kept the Dream Lord in his cage and demanded repayment instead of begging for forgiveness.
The Archangel shook his head.
Goodbye, Paul Maguire. You will not be able to try this again.
Joanna felt it, the sudden sense of emptiness, a loss of magic, of power all around her. The old man started wailing, a broken, almost animal-like sound. Somehow, the Archangel had ensured that no one living in here would be able to cast any kind of spell, not even to light a candle, ever again. The boy, who was not truly there, set the raven gently down. It was as if he was trying to put it together again, like some sort of demented puzzle. In the next blink, she was somewhere in London, in front of what was apparently some fancy tailoring shop.
Thanks, Purse, Eggsy said shakily, letting out a breath.
That was cutting it a little too close. I fucking hate magic and shite.
I keep telling you and Harriet can't be helped. We're not just going to have to deal with your run-of-the-mill supervillain anymore, the Archangel said wryly. And here I thought I was going to enjoy my retirement in peace.
I didn't know there was an Archangel, Percy, Joanna ventured, eyeing that grimoire and wondering how she could get her hands on it.
What? Knowledge was power and all that nonsense. She was curious.
It's Michael, actually, the Archangel said mildly. Percival's just a code name.
And he's, what, Galahad? Really? Joanna challenged.
Eggsy sheepishly rubbed the back of his neck.
Long story, but I could really use a drink about now.
He hefted the book in his other hand. This what you were looking for, bruv?
I'll take that, ah, very much, Michael said. Somehow he made the book disappear, much to Joanna's regret.
No, Joanna Constantine. I've already spent enough time with my memory knocked out of me after I had a bit of a run-in with one of those eldritch horrors that this book actually summons. I don't care to repeat the experience.
She rolled her eyes. Fine. I'll take the drink instead. And the story, if you please. She might as well get something out of this, what with apparently a Knight of the Round Table and an Archangel for company.
Michael smiled. There was an almost devilish sort of mischief to that smile, not quite what one would expect from an angel. But then again, this was, in fact, the commander of the heavenly host.
I know a place where we could get both.
Of course, they all ended up at the new inn.
The end.
Footnote the first. Dream had several very long and interesting conversations with certain little people of his acquaintance about Pokemon. It proved most edifying. Lucienne could only shake her head in fond amusement, as it was clear that the children who all knew Mr. Sandman quite well were a rather good influence on him, Muppet and Pokemon-inspired dreams, nightmares, and all. Footnote the second. It was to the very great regret of one Vernon Kingsley and his gang of generally unpleasant friends that they had chosen to celebrate getting one over on that bitch Joe Constantine at the new inn. First, Joanna was able to follow through on her threat regarding his manhood. Second, that pretty boy with the glasses wasn't half bad in a bar fight. Third, the other sharp-looking gentleman was also no slouch in that department either. Fourth, what the hell kind of pub was this, where even the schoolteacher sitting in the corner knew how to land a bleeding punch? Finally, Vernon and his mates also hadn't slept a decent night's sleep in weeks.
Footnote the third.
Dream of the Endless was not pleased with the attempt at desecrating the new inn which had been built in his name. He did enjoy watching his beloved husband, in his spirited defense of their home, and demonstrated his pleasure quite thoroughly once they were in private. This time, however, Fiddler's Green was the one surprised with the appearance of brand new flowers, the likes of which had not yet been seen in the waking world.
Notes.
A. Did I quote Neil himself somewhere in this fic? Yes.
Shh.
B. Ferdy the Dreamling. Y'all know why there's a dreamling named Ferdy. Am I right? C. Did we quote E.E. Cummings in this fic? Heck yes. For the Keelig factor, guys. Y'all don't cast a guy like Tom Sturridge with that face and that voice and not expect us to die of the Keelig, okay?
D. I think I found the Shakespeare sonnet that really cements Hobbes' enmity with the bard. This is probably going to appear in another fic.
Yep, I've been plot-buddied.
Again.
Blame Dream, it's all his fault.